Ches Ahmed Bey's Three Lines from the Bottom. With yesterday, that we had the whole machlokas about how Eretz Yisrael was divided, L'yotzim Mitzrayim, or L'boi Ha'aretz, or both. And in that connection, we started talking about B'nois Tzlafchad. Specifically, at the absolutely, B'nois Tzlafchad said that their father's portion should ought to go to them, and Hashem accepted that argument. And eventually, when they actually conquered and divided Eretz Yisrael, the pasuk says, "Vayiplu chavle Menashe asara." It says there were 10 portions, 10 large tracts of land in Eretz Yisrael that were given to Shevet Menashe. So we're trying to figure out where we're getting 10 from. So if we say the Yotzi Mitzrayim Nischalka Aretz, then we have six, there were six large batei avos of Menashe. The pasuk lists them, B'nai Asriel, B'nai Shechem, etc. So you have six large families of Shevet Menashe. And then you have four portions that went to the girls. Because again, you have their own, they have Tzlafchad's portion, you have the portion of Chefer, you have Tzlafchad as a Bechor, etc. And then we said the Tzlafchad had one brother who passed away in the desert without children, and that would be the 10th portion. Then we said we brought a Braisa that, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, he actually had two brothers who passed away in the desert without children, and that's another way we could say the Boya Oritz and the Schalka Oritz, that Eretz Yisrael was divided not based on those who left Mitzrayim, but starting with based on those who entered Eretz Yisrael. And then you had Chazara, that we returned to the previous generation and redivided, as we've learned before. So then, according to that, then it comes out that you would still have 10 tracts of land, 10 large portions for Shevet Menashe, six for the six batei of, one for not so much one for Tzlafchad himself, because he didn't make it alive into Eretz Yisrael, but for the fact that you have the other children of Chefer who did have children who didn't make it into Eretz Yisrael and were included in the census. And then you have Chazara, that it's returned back to Chefer and we divided. And since Tzlafchad was a Bechor, then you have two portions from that. So we said that Rabbi Acha bar Yaakov had learned from the fact that the pasuk says Nosen Titen. We learned from that there were, or from the fact actually, we said, because it says Nosen Titen, then therefore we learned from that there was actually that there were actually two brothers of Tzlafchad's who had passed away, and ultimately that por and ultimately those portions go, or parts of those portions go, to Tzlafchad's daughters. So then the Gemara points out, the fact that there was one brother, at least, we learn that from the fact says from the fact Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says there was one deceased brother, because the pasuk says Nosen Titen, and that teaches us there was an extra brother's portion. According to the opinion, according to Rabbi Yonason, who said that Tzlafchad had two brothers who had passed away. So then, how who meachuzas nachla? So that we learn from the fact that the pasuk is achuzas nachla, where it didn't have to say nachla; it could have just said nachla. Nosin titzlem nachla b'seicha, and instead it says achuzas nachla. So we can learn from that an additional portion as well, namely that there were two brothers. So it depends. Again, if we say the yotzim mitzrayim neschalka, then we only need one. We only need there to have been one brother who passed away without children. If you say the boy Mitzrayim Neschalka Aretz, then you need to have two. Either way, the point is that Tzlafchad's daughter has got four portions, and the rest of the Shevet got six. Well, the Gemara asks, "Amalei Rapapa, exactly what is the pasuk counting over here when it's saying 10 portions? Eat fallen kachoshiv. If the pasuk just wants to tell us that there were all the portions that the young ones got, meaning the generation that entered Eretz Yisrael. So as we said, whether we say we go according to Yotze Mitzrayim, and then we say that the and then we say their children get only by virtue of them, whether we say L'boi Ha'aretz, meaning the ones themselves that were born in the Midbar. Well, then Tuva Havu, there are a lot more than 10, because then you have to count the individual plots. So whether you look at it as according to the first census of Menashe, that there were 32,000 and some, or the second census that there were 52,000 and some, either way, that's a lot more than 10. So it's obviously not referring to the individual portion that every single person from Shevet Menashe got. The So if you're going to say it's referring only to the large families, shitav, then there's only six. And one of those six is chayfer already, just like we have in Parshas Pinchas lachayfer mishpachas achefri in Yeshua also over there when it's talked about this matter of the 10 portions. It also mentions over there. It also mentions over there the 10. The six families in Manasseh. So if you're going to tell me that it's just listing those, then you have six families and Chefer is already included. So therefore, there's no reason to mention them again specifically in connection with Tzlofchad's daughters. So either way, why is it saying 10? If you're going to tell me because the daughters got as a result of Tzlofchad, fine. Many other children also got as a result of their parents as well. So one once it mentions B'nai Chefer, then there's no reason to mention the specific portions that that B'nai Slavchad got. So either way, why is it so? So the question is really according to both opinions, whether you say the Yotz Mitzrayim or the Bo Yaaretz and the Skalka Aretz, why is the pasuk saying 10? So the answer is La'olam Bate Avos Kachashiv. As a matter of fact, it is counting the Bate Avos. It is going according to the larger divisions. It's not going according to the specifics, with the exception of Bnos Slavchad, where it goes into the details to tell us that they got four portions. The point the Pasuk wants us to know is, which we don't have clearly, we have it hinted at in the Pasuk in Parshas Pinchas, but we don't have it explicit. We have it more clearly over here, as we can deduce from the pasuk that they got the portion of Bechorah that would have gone to their father Tzlofchad. Alma Eretz Yisrael muchzekas he, which goes to show, therefore, that Eretz Yisrael is considered muchzek to us. Namely, as we learned the other day, as we're going to learn in detail later on in the parak, a Bechorah does not get a double portion of roi, of property that's not in his father's possession at the time he passes away. And then the father was only going to get it later, whether we're talking about, for example, a loan that's owed to the father and hasn't been paid back yet, whether we're talking about something that the father would have yarshin, but he hadn't yet yarshin at the time because the relative that he would have gotten from hadn't passed away yet, whatever the case. The point is that we don't say that a Bechorah gets a double portion of that later on in the Perek. We want to learn that from Psukim. But nevertheless, we're saying when it comes to Eretz Yisrael, it's not like that. And Eretz Yisrael is considered Muchzak, and it's considered already in the possession of the Jewish people. Therefore, we can say that a Bechorah would get a double portion of it, even if he himself wasn't alive for it. So that's the point. The Pasuk, to highlight that, the Pasuk mentions that Menashe got 10 portions, of which we're saying four of them specifically went to Bnos Slavchad, and one way or the other, whether you learn that Slavchad had one brother who passed away childless in the Midbar or two, either way, to get to four requires us to say that they received a double portion because of Slavchad. So that's the point the Pasuk wants to tell us. So the Gemara continues. Amar, now let's see. The Braisa had also said when the Braisa was the Braisa was mentioning about the Meraglim and about the Mesloinim and Adas Kodach. So we had one Braisa that said that they didn't have a, so we said Mesloinim and Adas Kodach, and we discussed yesterday who the Mesloinim are. We said they didn't get a portion of their own, but their children could get a portion in Eretz Yisrael by virtue of their grandparents. If they had a grandfather, whether a father's father or a mother's father, where the father didn't leave any sons, who is entitled to a portion in Eretz Yisrael, because they were among the Yotz Mitzrayim, then they would get a portion in Eretz Yisrael through that. They wouldn't get through their father, because their father, being from the Mesloinim or being from Adas Kodach, had forfeited his portion, but it would go to the grandparents, and then ultimately it would go to them. So the Gemara says, so we said, Omama, v'habonim, not the b'schus aviyavim, b'schus aviyimaseim. So they would get in the schus of their grandfather. So the question is, Vatani b'schus atzman. We have another braisa that says that they would get on their own schus, on their own merit. So we don't even have to resort to the fact that their grandparents were among those who left Mitzrayim, just the fact that they themselves entered Eretz Yisrael is enough to get them. And the answer is like Kasha, Hokamando Amal Yotzim Mitzrayim, Hokamando Amal Baya Oretz. Again, we've been discussing throughout the Sugya for the last couple of blocks that you have the two different opinions whether Eretz Yisrael was divided based on those who left Mitzrayim or those who entered Eretz Yisrael. So, according to the opinion that it was Yotzim Mitzrayim, then we would be saying that the children of the Mislonim and the Adas Korach wouldn't be getting on their own, and their fathers who left Mitzrayim forfeited it. So therefore, but their grandfathers also left Mitzrayim, and therefore they would have it. Where's the other Braisa saying that they got B'schus Atzmam holds according to the opinion that it was given out L'boy Ha'oretz, that it was given out based on those who entered Eretz Yisrael. So now, according to that opinion, we said, according to the second opinion in the Braisa that we learned before on Daf Kuf Yud Zayin, then afterwards you would have Chazara, that it would return back to their grandfather, to their fathers, and be redivided. Here the point is, Rabbeinu Yonah makes the point that in this case, actually, there would be no chazara, meaning, in other words, that so they get fully on their own. Since normally we say the boy ha'aretz neschalka aretz, according to that opinion, it means, as we said, that we would consider those who are entering Eretz Yisrael, those who are counted in the second census, we would assign each of them a portion. Then we have to return the portions. Then we have to act as though we're returning the portions to their father and then redividing it among all his descendants. So that, for example, even those who are below 20 years old at the time of the census in Parashas Pinchas are going to get a portion through their father as well. Here, we wouldn't do that because their fathers themselves had forfeited it, and it would mean the children then would get B'schus Atzmon without having to resort to that. And again, we had a Braisa that said that those portions went to Yeshua and Kalev. We said there were two different opinions on that, whether we make a hekish between the Meraglim, whose portions Yeshua and Kalev definitely got, and the Mitzlonim and Adas Korach, where you have, do we make a hekish between them or not? That we learned yesterday in the Gemara, you have two different opinions about it. In any case, so here when we have a braisa that says that the children of the Mislonim and Adas Korach got their own portion, so obviously that doesn't follow the opinion that it went to Yeshua and Kalev. But what we're saying is when the earlier braisa on Kuf Yud Zayin had said that they got in the source of their grandparents, and now we have a braisa that says that says that it went to them in their own schus, that would depend whether Yotz Mitzrayim or the boy Haaretz, Neschalka Haaretz, if they were 20 years old. The boy Sema, or another answer you could give, Hava Hala boy Haaretz, both Brises could be following the opinion that was given based on those who entered Eretz Yisrael. Now, of course, the earlier part of that braisa definitely has to be going according to the Yotzim Mitzrayim Neschalka Aretz, because we're saying the Meraglim, whose portion was taken by Yeshua and Kalev. But the Rashbam says that part may have been part of Reb Shimon ben Elazar's opinion. So now we're saying the Mislonim and Adas Korach, where that braisa before on Daf Kuf Yud Zayin had not held that the Mislonim and Adas Korach are compared to that, and their Nachla otherwise would have ended up among the whole Shevet and collective. So now we're saying instead that there can be a difference, even if we say the Boy Ha'aretz and the Schalka Ha'aretz, V'lekasha, Hod Lehava Ben Estrim, Hod Lehava Ben Estrim. But the two braises, where one says that got as a result of their grandparents, and the other one says they got on their own, would depend whether those children are below 20 years old or above 20 years old. So now the Mislonim and Adas Korach, that happened much earlier. The whole story of Korach, and of course the story of the Meraglim, happened much earlier in the time of the desert. So therefore, the Rashbam says, we have to be talking about the grandchildren of those Mislonim. So their fathers, so you'd have a Mislonim himself, somebody who joined in the whole thing with Korach. So he was killed during that. Then you have their children, let's say, also passed away in the Midbar. So now if their grandchildren are below 20, they're not entitled to a portion of their own, but through their fathers, or the B'nai HaMislonim, where so therefore, so we would actually have to go all the way back to We would have to actually go all the way back to the fathers of the Magi. So at this point, we'd be talking about the great grandchildren of the. We'd actually be talking about the great grandchildren of the the great grandfathers, rather, of the. Of the Mislinanim, and then they would get based on them, because they at least were ones who went to who went out of Mitzrayim. So we'd have to go all the way back to that. If we have somebody who's 20 years old himself when he comes into Eretz Yisrael, then very good. He's 20 years old. He got according to the opinion, then he gets his own portion. And Rav Shimon Elazar holds that all we need is that he gets his own portion. We don't even need Chazara. We don't even need this whole concept. Of going back to, we don't need this whole concept of going back to the ancestors to give it to them. But when they're above 20, but when they're below 20, the only way they're going to get would be through their ancestors, and since their ancestors did not enter Eretz Yisrael, then of necessity, according to Rav Shimon Elazar, we would say, then we have to focus on those who left Mitzrayim. Well, you have two generations in that case who left Mitzrayim above 20. You have, let's say, the Mislonin himself, and you have his father. Well, the Mislonin himself forfeited his portion. So therefore, so now it would go back to the generation before him who also left Mitzrayim, and then in turn it would go from there down, and then in turn it would go down from there to all of his descendants. So even though these children are below 20, nevertheless, they're no worse off in that regard than Bnei Slavchot, who are also not included in the census, and nevertheless they still get. So Rashbam goes into a bit of arichus about explaining what this means, how it is that if they're below 20, they still get a portion, these children, or grandchildren, rather, he says, of the Mislonanim. So that's what we're saying, is basically they can't get through the Mislonanim, but we can go back another generation to the Mislonanim's parents, who also went to their father, or to their mother's father, if necessary, if that mother's father didn't have any sons of his own, so his daughter's Yarshin, and they're gonna end up getting a portion that way. There's actually a marginal note. There's actually a note inserted in parenthesis into Rashbam that says that according to this, we may even say that this last Braisa may disagree with the previous Braisa that Yeshua and Kalev got the portion of the Meraglim. We could actually say. That no, the Meraglim's portion also was not forfeited and given away to Yeshua and Kalev, but rather it was given to, their children. That this Braisa may follow that. Then Tosfos also discusses and. Tosfos also points out for the same thing. The story of Korach is the story of Korach was not long after the story of the Meraglim. So therefore, so it's not possible to have any children of theirs who are less than 20 at the time of when they enter Eretz Yisrael, because they were in the Midbar for 40 years. So therefore, of necessity, as the Rashbam says, we have to be talking about grandchildren. And then Tosfos goes on to discuss why we can't say that they would get in the schus of their fathers who were the children of the Mislonanim, and so forth. Okay. The bottom line is, in other words, as the Gemara had said, Abaye had said, we learned in the Gemara yesterday, that in the end, every single person who entered Eretz Yisrael did get a portion somehow or other. On the other hand, the Gemara had said, maybe not. Maybe there were, in fact, people who didn't get and who had complaints, but the Pasuk doesn't record them. But in any case, basically, certainly almost everybody got, either on their own or by their parents, according to the different opinions. Okay, so now getting back to, we said another reason why Bnei Slavchot got an extra portion is Veshoye Bechor, because Slavchot was Bechor Neutel Shnei Chalakim, so therefore he got two portions in Eretz Yisrael. There's, by the way, there's a medrash actually that says that not only Tzlofchad was a Bechor, when the Pasuk lists the whole genealogy with Tzlofchad ben Chefer, ben Gilad, ben Machir, ben Menashe, there's a medrash that says that actually every single one of them was a Bechor. Not that that's relevant as far as this matter of dividing up Eretz Yisrael, because only the ones who at least left Mitzrayim are the ones who are entitled to a portion of Eretz Yisrael. According to that opinion, the previous generations before Chefer apparently did not. Gilad and Machir and Menashe himself, of course, did not. So it's, but it's just an interesting, but it's just an interesting point that that the Medrash says that all of them were a Bechor after a Bechor. Anyway, so the question is, why is Tzlofchad getting a double portion that then he transmits to his daughter? Is Va'amai Royu? So we said that the Pasuk wants to tell us that Eretz Yisrael is Mochzekas, but now the Gemara is revisiting that point. Is that so simple? How is Tzlofchad getting a double portion in Eretz Yisrael? V'amai Roy, who on the face of it, Eretz Yisrael is only Roy. It's going to be his possession, but it's not yet. He didn't actually take possession of it. And as we're going to learn later on in the parak, a Bechor does not get a double portion of Roy as he would of Mochzak. When it comes to Roy, when it comes to property that's not his father's yet at the time that when his father passes away, then the Bechor doesn't get a double portion of it. He just gets a single portion like everybody else. So why is Tzlofchad getting a double portion over here? And the answer is Amar of Yehuda Mashmuel be Yistos Alim. So Rabbi Yehuda says in the name of Shmuel, you're right. We don't mean that Tzlofchad would get a double portion of Eretz Yisrael and his daughters would get from that. What we mean is he would get a double portion of Metaltalin, any Metaltalin that they had in the desert. For example, the pegs that they used to keep their tents in place, those are Metaltalin, and therefore he would get a double portion of those. So in other words, Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel would understand that before when you said that when you said in the Mishnah and in the Braisa that Bnei Tzlofchad got a double portion, we don't mean a double portion of land in Eretz Yisrael. What we mean is a double portion of the Metaltalin that belonged to Chefer and then belonged to his children after him. We're mentioning tent pegs, Rashbam says, because definitely everybody in the desert had a tent. So we can use tent pegs as an example of the kind of metaltalin that would have been divided among the Yoshim, so they would get a double portion of that. But you're right, says Shmuel, they wouldn't get a double portion of the land in Eretz Yisrael because it was only Roy. But the Gemara says, Masiv Rabbah. But Rabbi says, how can you say that? We said in the Braisa, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Bnei Tzlofchad not to Dalin Chalakim, the Bnei Tzlofchad got four portions in Eretz Yisrael, Shenema Vayiplu Chav LeMenashe Asara. As we said, that Menashe got 10 large tracts of land in Eretz Yisrael. And again, the only way to make that work, given that there were only 6 batei av from Menashe, is by saying that Bnei Tzlofchad got 4. However we learn that, whether we learn that they got Tzlofchad's 2 portions and Chefer's 1 portion and the portion of one brother of Tzlofchad who had passed away in the desert, or whether we say that they only got the 2 portions of Tzlofchad and not of Chefer, because we'd say Laboya Oretz and Schalka Oretz, that we go according to those who entered Eretz Yisrael. And therefore we would say that all we have is therefore Chefer's other children would get a portion, and then it would be returned to Chefer and then redivided, and so they'd get their portion within that, and that then there would be 2 brothers of Tzlofchad who passed away without children, and Tzlofchad would get their portion. So one way or the other, we're saying that Tzlofchad was a Bechor, And they got a double portion through that, and that's the only way to make the number 10 in the pasuk work. And obviously we're not talking about Yistos Alim, we're not talking about tent pegs, because the pasuk is talking about Chavle Menashe, the portions of land of Menashe. Tosfos also points out, now, you could say, okay, so Tzlofchad had 3 brothers who passed away without children, what's the problem? But Tosfos says, come on, there'd be no chiddush in mentioning that. When you have that there was one or there were 2 of them, then there's a chiddush, and therefore the pasuk would bother mentioning, unlike with all the other shvatim, where it doesn't mention the number of tracts of land that they got. It just says, here's the area in Eretz Yisrael that they got, here's the cities in it, and then it was up to the nasi of each shevet to decide decide who gets which portion. And in within it, here, when the Pasuk makes a point of mentioning that there were 10 tracts of land belonging to Shevet Menashe, so okay, then it has to be there's a chiddush in it, namely the fact that they got Slavchad's portion and the fact that they got a Chelek Bechora, etc. But if you were going to say that they had three, that he had three brothers and there's no Chelek Bechora, there'd really be no chiddush in it, and the Pasuk would have no reason to mention the point at all. Then it would just mean, then it would just say six because of the six Bate Avos of Menashe. So we see clearly from that there was a chelek b'chora. So one of the, and in the land, not just in the metaltlin, like Shmuel says. Elo Amar Rabba Eretz Yisrael Mochzekesi. So rather, Rabba says, like we said at the top of the Amud, Eretz Yisrael is considered already mochzek. It's considered already fully in the possession of the Jewish people at the time because Hashem had promised it to the Avos. And when Hashem promises something, it means it's definitely going to come true. So therefore, it's considered already mochzek, and therefore a bechor can get a double portion in it. And that's how it was with Slavchad, and that's how his daughters ended up getting it. So the Gemara continues, Mesfi. Now, I have a contradiction on that, though. So you're telling me, Rabba, that the Eretz Yisrael is considered Mochzak, and therefore that Slavchad gets a double portion, and since he had passed away, then therefore his daughters get it instead. But we learn in a Braisa, Omer Abchidka, Shimon HaShikmoni Hoyoli Chover Mitalmidei Rabbi Akiva. Shimon HaShikmoni was a colleague of mine. He was one of the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva. Now, we know Rabbi Akiva had two sets of Talmidim. Famously, he had the 24,000 Talmidim who passed away between Pesach and Shavuos, and then you have the five Talmidim after that that he taught and reestablished the Torah in the world that way. The Shimon HaShikmoni is not listed among the five new ones, so B'Pashtos, he must have been one of the original 24,000. This is the only place in Shas, it seems, where he's mentioned. Anyway. So Shimon HaShikmoni was a colleague of mine, says Rav Chidka. He was a Talmud of Rav Akiva. V'chach hoya Rav Shimon HaShikmoni Oimer. Rav Shimon HaShikmoni used to say as follows. Ben Yehoyada points out, by the way, first he calls him Shimon HaShikmoni, then he calls him Reb Shimon HaShikmoni, because when he first knew him, he didn't have smicha yet. But then when he said this is Rasha, he already had smicha, so therefore Reb Chidka mentions his title as well. Anyway, So Reb Shimon HaShikmoni used to say, Yedea Hoya Moshe Rabbeinu Shepnos Slavchad Yoshasein. Moshe Rabbeinu knew to begin with that Slavchad's daughters are going to inherit. Now you have in the Psukim over there where the Bnos Slavchad come with their argument that we shouldn't be entitled to a portion in Eretz Yisrael. So it's not like Moshe didn't already know that they're entitled to that portion. He already knew that. The Rashbam points out, after all, they'd already been taught many years earlier. They'd already been taught. They'd already been taught the dinim mominus of the Torah already in Mora, even a few weeks before Matan Torah, shortly after Kriyas Yamsuf. They'd already been taught dinim mominus shom somla chokol mishpat. So now this is many years later. Plus, also, the Rashbam points out, Bnei Slavchad themselves, we're going to learn on Amud Beis, made the argument that look, you know, if we're not considered children as far as Yerusha, then we shouldn't be considered children as far as Yibum either, and our mother should do Yibum, and that way our father's name will still be preserved. So again, Shimon HaShikmoni is saying, Moshe knew that point already. So he knew that they're going to. So he knew one way or the other that they're going to inherit. But he didn't know whether they're going to get the double portion of the bechor or not, and that was what he had to ask Hashem. So the point of the question is the Gemara is going to end up saying on Amud Beis, if Eretz Yisrael mochazekasi, then there should be no reason for a question. But first, the Gemara is going to bring the rest of the Braisa. By rights, the parasha of Nachla should have been written by Moshe. In other words, if it hadn't been for Bnei Slavchad, it's not like this would have been left out of the Torah. It would have just been like any other mitzvah in the Torah. By Dabar Hashem al Moshe Lamer, here are the rules of Nachla. Ella shezochu Bnei Slavchad v'nichtav al yodam, but Bnei Slavchad Slavchon had the schus that it was written through them, that they came to Moshe Rabbeinu with their argument, and that Hashem accepted their argument and said that it should be written into that it should be written into the Torah, into the Torah. The point is that Rashbam says, and then the Ritva explains in a little more detail, you shouldn't think, and if Bnei Slavchon hadn't spoken up, would this parasha have been missing from the Torah? No, one way or the other, Hashem would have put it into the Torah. All it is that you might think, in fact, that Rashbam says, without knowing this, you might go even further. You might say, well, there might have been a lot of other mitzvahs that Hashem wanted to give, but he didn't end up giving because the circumstances didn't present themselves. Because you see, on the face of it, only because Bnei Slavchon came forward, only therefore do we have this parasha of Nachas. So no, the point is that the point that Shimon HaShikmoni wants to tell us is that no, one way or the other, these parashas were destined to be written. Hashem had them planned as mitzvahs, and therefore they have to be given and written one way or the other. All it is that Bnei Slavchon had this chus that they're the ones through whom it was revealed to Moshe. But if it hadn't been for that, if they hadn't come forward, then it would have just been like any other mitzvah in the Torah. Hashem would have given it unilaterally to Moshe. Similarly, continues the Gemara, similarly, near the end of Parashas Shlach, we have the story of the Mekoshesh Eitzim. A person is gathering wood on Shabbos, and they arrest him and bring him to Moshe. And the pasuk says they put him in a temporary holding cell by Mishmer. They put him like in jail. Kilei Fodash Maya Osiloi, because it hadn't been specified what they should do for him. So again, on the face of it, you would say it means they didn't know what to do with him at all until Hashem tells Moshe he gets stila. So no, says the Braisa, Moshe Rabbeinu knew that he's chayav misa. Shenema machal alayam mois yumas, because the pasuk clearly says that whoever breaks Shabbos is chayav misa. So it was obvious that he's going to be chayav misa. All the question was, what kind of misa should he get? So there, and Hashem had to come and tell Moshe Rabbeinu that it was that it's skila. So when the pasuk says kilei fodash maya osaloi, all it means is that we don't know what kind of misa it would have been. It's definitely going to be some kind of misa. We just don't know which one. There is, by the way, a connection over here in the Gemara and Shabbos. Actually, the Gemara discusses what was Tzlofchad's avera. We're saying over here that Tzlofchad's daughter was come and say, Avinu Meis Bamidbar, he passed away in the desert, and he wasn't among Adas Kodach, and he wasn't among the Meraglim, etc., etc. And therefore he should be entitled to a portion in Eretz Yisrael, ki bechete nes, because he passed away because of his avera. So the question is, what Aveda was it exactly? So in the Gemara Shabbos, Rabbi Akiva says he was the Mekoshesh Eitzim. Actual connection over here between the Mekoshesh Eitzim and his daughters. Then the Gemara says that one of the other Tanurim argues with Rabbi Akiva and says it's wrong to identify him as that. The fact is the Torah didn't identify him. So a different opinion is that Tzlofchad was one of the Ma'apilim, that he was one of after the Chet Meraglim, after Moshe told them off that how could you disobey Hashem? How could you not trust Hashem that he's going to defeat the Canaanim, etc. So a bunch of people said, you know what? It's true. We're sorry. We shouldn't have doubted Hashem. Let's go now and go up this mountain into Eretz Yisrael and conquer it. And Moshe tells them it's not going to work out. Hashem's protection is no longer with you. And a bunch of them went anyway. And the pasuk describes they got defeated and killed by the Amodim. So according to that second opinion, Tzlofchad was one of them. Anyway, so back to the Gemara over here then. So again, the same way as with Tzlofchad's daughters, Moshe knew they are going to inherit property in Eretz Yisrael. He just didn't know if they're going to get a double portion. The same way with the Mekoshesh Eitzim, years earlier, Moshe knew that he's Chayav Misa, but he didn't know what kind of Misa. And that's what Hashem had to explain to him. Tosfos actually wonders, well, what's the question? In general, we have a rule that whenever the Torah says that a person is chayav misa, and it doesn't specify what kind of misa, then it's chenek. In the Gemara Sanhedrin, which we'll get to later this year, Be'ez Hashem, You have a machlokas, which of the four missus is the which of the four missus is the least severe. It's chenek according to the chachamim, and then hereg according to Reb Shimon. So chenek is one of the less harsh ones, or even the least harsh according to the chachamim, and therefore that's kind of the default where the Torah doesn't otherwise specify. So if the Torah tells us that a person is machal Shabbos, he's chayiv misa, and it doesn't say what kind, then Moshe should know it's chenek. So, what's the question in the first place? So, Tosfos explains that Moshe wasn't sure because since Shabbos is a very major avera, and after all, a person who breaks Shabbos is considered like he's an oved avodah zarah, which has implications in halacha. That, for example, a person is mechalal Shabbos is considered for certain purposes like a goy. He handles wine, for example. The wine becomes also to drink. So Moshe had reason to think, just like an oved avodah zarah gets skila, maybe a person who's mechalal Shabbos also gets skila. And Hashem told Moshe, indeed, that's so. So that was Moshe's suffering. Tosfos also, by the way, points out there's an opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, which also we're going to learn in the Gemara Sanhedrin, that says a person can't be chayav misa unless you tell him what kind of misa to begin with he's exposing himself to. Meaning, we know a person needs hasra, and there was definitely hasra over there. Rashi explains on the pasuk, since it says hamotzim oisim mekoshesh etzim, means they found him gathering wood and they warned him to stop, and he didn't stop, and therefore he's chayav misa. So they definitely gave him hasra, but according to Rabbi Yehuda, that's not enough. You actually have to tell him if you do this, you are going to be chayev such and such a misa. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, this would have had to be a hiras shah. According to the Chachamim, to begin with, it's not necessary because you don't have to tell them what misa, and therefore, even though they didn't know at the time which misa it is, but they knew it's chayev misa, and that's good enough. Anyway, the point is that was Moshe's suffix, therefore, should he maybe get skila on the grounds that it's similar to be that it's similar to that it's similar to worshipping Avodah Zarah, and a person who worships Avodah Zarah is chayiv skila. There are a couple of other interesting answers as well, besides for Tosfos's answer, there's actually the Rekeach. It says that Hashem had told Moshe, everybody in general, when the Torah tells us somebody is chayiv misa without specifying, then it means it's going to be specifically chenek, except in the case of Shabbos. So Hashem told Moshe that Shabbos is an exception, but Hashem didn't tell him specifically what that means, which one is it going to be, and now Moshe didn't know, which is why he had to ask Hashem. So in any case, that was Moshe's suffolk is, and then so that was Moshe's suffolk, not whether he's chayiv misa, but what misa it is. So again, or Yehoshua Parshish Makoshish Shitikosiv Ayudei Moshe. So by rights, this would have been written through Moshe in the ordinary way. Hashem would have come at some point to Moshe and told him by Daba Hashem Moshe Lamer, you should know anybody who breaks Shabbos is going to be chayiv skill. Elish is chayiv makoshish, but the makoshish was guilty of breaking Shabbos, the nichtav al yodai, and therefore it was written through him that the pasuk says he did it, and then he was executed for it. So l'lamdacha, this teaches you shemagalgam schus ayidei zakai v'choyv ayidei chayev. Hashem causes good things to happen through good people and not such good things to happen through not such good people. So in other words, like this, so Hashem caused that the fact that there should be the dinim of nachla should be written down, and that children and relatives should be able to yarshin from their relatives. It was written specifically in the Torah through ayidei zakai, through bnei slacha, and the choyva, the fact that a person gets skila, where otherwise he would have gotten chenek, which is much more lenient, is ayidei chayev, is through somebody who was guilty, namely the mekoshesh etzim. Now, Tosfos at the bottom of this omer of Kuf Yud Tes Amud Beis brings an interesting idea. It brings from a medrash that Slavchod actually was doing it l'shem shamayim. The Jewish people figured, look, after the Chet HaMeraglim, after we're stuck in the Midbar for 40 years, why should we have to keep mitzvahs at all? So now Slavchod went and was Mechal Shabbos in order to demonstrate, and he got executed for it, in order to demonstrate that no, mitzvahs are very much still in effect now. That mitzvahs are still very much in effect, and you can see a person is even chayav misa for it. So according to that, he's not so much a chayav, but nevertheless, the fact is he did break Shabbos and he was chayav misa for it. So again, in Masech the Shabbos, Rabbi Akiva says that the Tzlochon is the Mekoshe Sheitzim, and therefore that's a very direct connection with what we're talking about with him and his daughters. Marsha, by the way, goes into and points out that in a way that it was a malacha she'netzricha legufa, because after all, a person, he's not doing the malacha for the sake of a makosha she'etzim is chayav for gathering wood for the malacha of ma'amer or for the malacha of carrying, as the case may be. The Gemara and Shabbat has a couple of opinions what exactly the malacha was that he was over on. In any case, so here, in order to be chayav for a malacha on Shabbos, it has to be tzricha legufa. It has to be that he's doing it for the sake of the actual object. For example, a person is gathering wood or other plants on Shabbos because he actually needs them. Over here, Tzlofcha doesn't actually need them. He's just trying to show the Jewish people a lesson. Therefore, it was a malacha she'enet tzricha legufa. But the fact is, when the Edom are giving him Asra, they can't know what he's thinking about, and therefore, as far as they're concerned, he's doing it legufa. The Rebbe expands on that actually in a sicha in a chelek kof ches and explains this is why Tzlofcha did this specifically after the story of the Meraglim, because here you have with the story of the Meraglim, we're thinking we don't need practical mitzvahs. Why should we go into Eretz Yisrael and end up doing practical mitzvahs? Better we can stay in the Midbar and just learn Torah. So Tzlofcha points out to them, you see, when it comes to Shabbos, machshava is very important, and nevertheless, we still see that a person is machal Shabbos b'maisa, even if he has a different machshava in mind, he's still chayiv misa. So realize that practical mitzvahs are very important, and for the same reason that Abigail explains in the Sicha, for the same reason this story is placed right after the dinim of a person worships Avodah Zarah, because Avodah Zarah is the same kind of thing. It depends on machshava. A person thinks that he's accepting this Avodah Zarah as a god, then that already is enough for it. It's a very serious thing, and nevertheless you need Maisa as well. So he's saying over here again the same thing. As much as Machshava is important when it comes to Shabbos, and in fact it's the only kind of Avera, if he wants to show people are still Chayav Misa for Averas, why is he picking Davka Shabbos? Because that's the only way that he could do it. Without that's the only way that he could do it, that he could do an Avera without actually doing it in the sense that he has in mind that he's doing an Einat Tzricha Legufa, whereas when it comes to other mitzvahs, you don't really have that. But anyway, the Rebbe points out in the Sicha that's why it's in connection with Avodah Zarah, because Avodah Zarah, you have the same kind of thing where the Machshava is very important, but it's the Maisa that actually makes the difference. In any case, so thus far the Braisa. So we're saying, in other words, that, so again, going back to Uzziah and the Braisa, Moshe knew that Bnei Tzlofchad are entitled to a portion in Eretz Yisrael. He didn't know whether they're entitled to a double portion because Tzlofchad was a Bechor. Now, the question is, if you're telling me, Rabbah, that Eretz Yisrael is considered already in the chazaka of the Yotzi Mitzrayim, because Hashem had promised it to them, and therefore that makes it already muchzik for them, and therefore Bechor could get a double portion, then why does Moshe even have a suffix in the first place? So how can Rabbah say as a blanket statement that Eretz Yisrael is muchzik if we see that apparently Moshe Rabbeinu had himself a question on that until Hashem clarified it for them? And the Ritva also points out, you could say, the Ramban points out, really, I mean, even if you say that Eretz Yisrael is only Ru'uya, then fine, then it's clear, it's not Ru'uya, it's Ru'uya, it's not Muchzik, so therefore there's no double portion, still, what's the suffix? So the Ritva says, okay, maybe Moshe didn't know that particular detail itself, whether a Bechor gets in Ru'uy like in Muchzik, and Hashem clarifies him, normally a Bechor doesn't get in Ru'uy, but here, Eretz Yisrael is Muchzakas. So the Gemara answer is he gufa kam mestapka. That exactly is Moshe's suffix. Dichtiv, because after all, the pasuk says v'nasati osa lachem moirosha ani Hashem. Hashem says I'm going to give it to you as moirosha. Now moirosha is moloshim yerusha. So something that's going to go from generation to generation. But also moirosha can mean something that you bequeath to your children. So is Hashem saying that the Eretz Yisrael is Merosha, as it's in Yerusha, going down from father to son, going down from Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov down to you, and therefore you're Mochzik in it? So therefore, when the Yotzim and Mitzrayim pass away in the desert, then their children automatically get it because they're the next generation. Odoma Shemorishin ve'enin Yoshin. Maybe the word Merosha means that that the Yotzim and Mitzrayim themselves can bequeath it to their children, but maybe they themselves didn't yarshin it. So maybe it's something. Maybe it won't be. Maybe it won't be Muchzik. Maybe it's only considered Roy at this point, and therefore the Bechor shouldn't get a double portion. So Moshe knew that there's a concept maybe that so Moshe wasn't sure about this concept of whether Eretz Yisrael is Muchzik, because we can learn the Pasuk in two different ways. And Moshe was answered for both of them. First of all, Eretz Yisrael is a Yerusha from your ancestors, and also it is true, Marishin Ve'en and Yoshin. It is true that the ones who left Mitzrayim are going to bequeath it to their children. They're not going to yarshin it themselves because they're going to end up because they end up passing away in the midbar. So since it's a Yerusha from your ancestors, then yes, there is a chelik b'chora because it's considered muchzik. But merushin and in yoshin, that really Moshe actually Rashbam points out Moshe didn't really need to be told that. Obviously, this is that Bnei Tzlochon came forward as at the end of the 40 years in the desert. By that time, anybody who was going to pass away already did. So he's not really focusing on that, but in other words, Hashem is clarifying for him all those years earlier when I told you v'nasati oisa lachem moirosha, it meant that these people to whom you're speaking it now are not going to end up being the ones who inherit it themselves. They're the ones there because they're going to pass away in the desert, and it's going to go to their children. As in fact, we find behind the dichtiv. Thus, we also find something in the Shir HaSayam that reflects that. You have the pasuk to be a moi v'sita a moi behind a chalasta. You will bring them and you will place them in the mountain of your inheritance. Now, to be a nu loy nemar, it doesn't say you will bring us. Ela to be a moi. It says you will bring them. So in other words, the same way as Merosha, the same way as Venasati Oisa Lachem Merosha, is also meant to have a subtext that it means you yourselves are not going to be yarshining it. Only your children will. The same way in the Shir HaSayam, also when they said when they were saying with Ruach HaKodesh to be Emoi v'sita Emoi, means that the Hashem was it was being hinted at that they themselves are not going to go into Eretz Yisrael, that only their children were. So they themselves didn't realize the full import of what they're saying, but that's how Hashem caused them to say that, because that's how it was going to end up being. There's actually different opinions in the Mishnah, in the Gemara and Sota, who it is that said the words of Shir HaSayam, whether it was Moshe alone and everybody answered after him, or whether maybe only answered Rosh Prakim, maybe they only answered Al Derech, like the way that Amram describes that people would say Hallel, where, for example, everybody would just repeat over and over, Ashiro Hashem ki goi ga. So in that case, then we'd be talking about that it was Moshe saying the words. And then on the other hand, you have the opinion that everybody said it, either that everybody said it after Moshe, or that Beruach HaKodesh, everybody said it together. So that would factor into it. Marsha also points out, if we say that it was Moshe said the Shira, and Rashi mentions on the Pasuk, he says, Nisnabim Moshe, that he's not going to come into Eretz Yisrael. So based on it, in other words, that Moshe knew already he's not going into Eretz Yisrael. He knew already that Hashem had told him personally at the end of Parashat Shmos, you're going to see what I'm doing to Paroi, but you're not going to see what I'm going to do to the 31 kings. So Moshe already knew about himself, but now we're saying he didn't know that the rest of the Jewish people are going to be in the same boat until now, many years later. Hashem tells him, earlier when I told you, Menasati Oisa Lachem Moirosha, then it has that implication in it, that it means that in retrospect, you're going to see they didn't make it into Eretz Yisrael. So, in fact, the Yerushalmi has an interesting point on it. Over here, the Rashba brings it over here from the Yerushalmi, that whenever you have a word Moirosha, it means something that's weak, So like over here, it's weak in the sense that the people to whom this promise was given are not themselves going to end or going to inherit Eretz Yisrael. So then the Gemara, then the Yerushalmi continues. So they ask Rabbi Hoshea, how can you say that? What about Torah Tzivalonu Moshe Meirosha Kehilas Yaakov? And it's a constant thing by us Jewish people. And Rabbi Hoshea says, yeah, but on the other hand, here you have, you work hard on learning Torah, and it's so easy to forget. So in that sense, it's also Moroshah. It's something that you can very easily lose if you don't apply yourself to it. Okay. In any case, the point is, so that was Moshe's suffix, whether Eretz Yisrael is Muchzak, and the answer is yes, it is Muchzak. But yes, by the way, you should realize in retrospect, when I told you Moroshah, that it means the original generation of Yetzias Mitzrayim are not going to be the ones who inherit Eretz Yisrael. Okay. So now the Gemara goes on. Let's analyze in more detail more of the story of Bnos Tzlafchad. The pasuk says, "Vatamodna lifnei Moshe v'lifnei Elazar HaKohen." They stood in front of Moshe and in front of Elazar HaKohen v'lifnei Nesiim and in front of the Nesiim, Mechola Eda, and the rest of the congregation, meaning the Sanhedrin. So the question is, why in that order? Efshe amdu lifnei Moshe chula. How could it be that they stood in front of Moshe and they didn't get an answer? V'lo'omer lahen davar, and they didn't get an answer. V'omdu lifnei Nesiim v'chol ha'eda, and then they go to the Nesiim and the whole Eda. In other words, if Moshe doesn't know the answer, how would anybody else know? How would Elazar know? How would the Nesiim know, etc.? So why is the pasuk phrasing it in that way, as though they went to Moshe and didn't get an answer, and then they go to Elazar and so forth? So Rabbi Yoshia says you have to move around, you have to rearrange the pasuk and then douse it. So in other words, it doesn't mean that they first went to Moshe. It means that they went first to the Eda, and the Eda, the Sanhedrin, didn't have the answer. Then they went to the Nesiim. Then they went to Elazar, and finally they came to Moshe after everybody else said we don't know. So the Torah is writing them in the order of their chashivos, but it doesn't mean that that's the actual order. That's the actual order that they went to. So in other words, on the one hand, the pasuk wants to put the Rav ahead of the Talmidim, therefore it has to put Moshe first, but it doesn't mean they actually went to ask Moshe first, because that wouldn't make any sense. Abba Chonan, I'm a Meshum Rebbe Eliezer. Abba Chonan says, no, there's a, in the name of Rebbe Eliezer, no, there's a different answer. But Beis Medrash, Hayu Yoshvin, they were all sitting together in the Beis Medrash, V'chol Chuvah Omdu Lahem Lifnei Kulam. So the Bnei Slavchot came and stood in front of all of them. In other words, Lifnei Moshe, Lifnei Elazar, etc. Doesn't mean that they went first to Moshe, then to Elazar, or vice versa. They went first to Elazar, then to Moshe. It means they went in front, they went into the Beis Medrash, and they found Moshe and Elazar and the Nesiim and Kol HaEder are all sitting over there, and they posed the question in front of all of them. So the Gemara says, "B'mayikam miflagi." What's the underlying machlokas? So Marsav chokin cover the Talmud b'mkayim haram. Rabbi Eliezer holds that it's proper to give cover to a Talmud even when his Rebbe is present. So meaning, in other words, that there's nothing wrong in asking in the presence of Moshe, in turning all of you together, can you give us an answer? What's the story as far as our father's Nachla? And it's not a slight to Moshe Rabbeinu that they're not turning directly to him, because it's legitimate to ask Elazar and the Nesiim and everybody else in front of Moshe. Omar Savar, whereas Rabbi Yoshia holds in Chokin, that no, you don't give cover to a Talmud in front of the Rav, and therefore it would be inappropriate for them to ask Elazar or so forth in front of Moshe. So rather we have to say that it means they went to the Eda when they were by themselves, and the Eda couldn't give them an answer, and then they went to the Nesiim, and then they worked their way up until Moshe Rabbeinu. So that's how the Rashbam understands the Machlokas. Rabbeinu Gershom actually learns the other way around. That Rabbi Yoshia would say Chok and cover the Talmud Makom Harav, so therefore they went to ask the Talmidim first, and when they didn't get an answer from the Talmidim, then they went to the Rav. Whereas Rabbi Eliezer holds in Chok and the Talmud cover the Talmud Makom Harav, so therefore they have to go directly to Moshe. So when we say V'holch V'omdu Lifnei Kolam, they're actually addressing the question to Moshe. And everybody else is there. When we say that Elazar and the Nesiim and so forth were there, then it means that they're there just to hear what Moshe is going to answer. There is, by the way, there are a couple of other places where it also says something similar, where they came and asked the question.
Yeah, for example, by the Tmeim, by Pesach Sheni, where also it says that they came in front of Moshe and in front of Aaron, and you have the same kind of thing. If they asked Moshe and Moshe didn't know the answer, why would they ask Aaron? So either it means again that you flip it around, or it means that they were sitting in the Beis Medrash. There's a Rashi Sicha where the Rebbe talks about it and explains that at Pesach Sheni, it's more mashma that they were sitting in the Beis Medrash, whereas here, it's more mashma that they were sitting by the Pasuk says they were by the Ohel Moed, and the Ohel Moed is not usually the place where they learn Torah. It's the place where you receive communication from Hashem. Therefore, Rashi on the Pasuk over here brings these two opinions, whether you have to flip around the words in the Pasuk, or whether it means they were all sitting together, because Rashi finds it easier to understand according to the opinion Soras HaMikra, because that would fit better with the words of the Pasuk that they were by the Ohel Moed, rather than according to Rabbi Eliezer that they were in the Beis Medrash. Okay, so what is the halacha as far as the chokin covered or ain't chokin covered the Talmud b'makom harav? So the Gemara says on the one hand, we have the halacha that says that we do give covered to a Talmud in the presence of the Rav, and then you have another halacha that says that you don't. Well, Asha Hilchsa Hilchsa. Well, then you have a contradiction. What is the actual halacha? Do you do it or not? And the answer is Hilchsa Hilchsa, like Asha. There's no contradiction between the halachas. It depends whether the Rav himself gives kavod to this Talmud. Then it's legitimate to show kavod to that Talmud even in front of his Rebbe, because it shows the Rebbe likes that people are giving that people are giving kavod to this Talmud, so therefore it's legitimate to actually follow through on that and show kavod to that Talmud, even in the presence of the Rav. Whereas if the Rav himself does not give kavod to that Talmud, then it's not appropriate to show kavod to him in front of the Rebbe, because then what are you doing? If the Rebbe himself has not shown honor to him, then you shouldn't be doing that. So here, when you find that Moshe has shown kavod to Elazar and to the Nasiim and to Kol HaEda, so therefore, so now you have the machlokas. Is that still the appropriate thing to do, or not? And that's according to the Rashbam. The Gemara brings up this point of Chok and Kavod Talmud called the Talmud Makom Harav in a couple of other places in Shas. One thing is you have a here now doing Chol Hamoed Sukkos. You would have doing a year of Hakil. The king would be reading from the Torah, and the Mishnah describes how you would have a whole chain of people giving him the Sefer Torah. You'd have the Shamash of the Shul would give it to the president of the Shul, and the president of the Shul would give it to the Sgan, and the Sgan to the Kohen Gadol, and the Kohen Gadol to the king. Isn't that an example of Chok and Kavod Talmud Makom Harav, that the for example, the Shamash is showing the president of the shul covered in the presence of the king? And the Gemara says no, even if you say in chok and kavod the Talmud Makom Harav, there it's more fakir, it's more of honor to the king to show that there were so many levels below him. So Tosfos points out over there that actually that even when the Rebbe is not cholik kavod, even when he doesn't show kavod to the Talmud, then Rabbi Yoshia and Rabbi Eliezer can be arguing whether it's still proper to show kavod to the Talmud. And the Gemara is saying that if the Rebbe doesn't, then you shouldn't, but if he does, then you should. So we'll continue tomorrow, Bas Hashem, and we'll analyze more in more detail, more of the details of the story of Bnos Slachon and their argument and so forth.